these weeks here, it's going to be a time where we're going to have a lot of stories. We're going to tell people about different memories that we had of this really memorable, worrisome time here this week. And so there's going to be these memories that we've told our kids. You'll tell your kids about time when, like, sports shut down, the world stopped, and grocery stores ran out of toilet paper, and all those kind of things, and who knows what else is going to happen. But it's one of those just memorable times that's going to stay with us. Like some people talk about the JFK assassination or Pearl Harbor or whatever. This is probably going to be one of those times. And I was thinking back to another memorable time that I had. It was September 11th, 2011. No, I didn't get the date wrong. It wasn't 2001. It was 10 years later, the 10-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks in the United States. And I remember where I was because of an attack. And it was a tense time. And no, it wasn't in New York City or Washington or Pennsylvania, but it was in church. And it was a time when things were just like going really badly. We picked 9/11, the 10-year anniversary, to do some changes. And who knew, but sometimes changes aren't popular in a church. Have you ever seen that before? We had no idea that was going to happen. So we came in blindsided, not knowing how unpopular some of the different things we were going to do was. But people were upset. There was yelling, pushing going on. Like, it was just it was a tense atmosphere. And I remember people were afraid, people were frustrated, and it was starting to think, are these changes worth it or not? And I remember the guy, we got a new guy who was leading the music that day, and we started the service with this 9/11 tribute video, 10-year anniversary. And then after that, he said he kind of looked out and saw people in the congregation, but saw so many, like, frustrated or concerned faces, he just decided to shut his eyes. And as he started singing, then something happened that really changed everything. And I'll get back to tell you about that later, like what happened, what changed at that moment. But first, I want to ask you, have you ever had a time in your life where you felt surrounded by problems? Maybe right now, but just a time maybe when you were overwhelmed, it seemed like maybe everything was working against you. Maybe it was a time where you felt like people in your family didn't understand, maybe you're in your marriage, or people at work, people at church even, and they blamed you for what was going wrong. Maybe you felt like that. Maybe you had a time when it just seemed like people disapproved of you. You felt lonely, you couldn't quite connect with people, you felt like you were the odd person out, and it's just like, does anybody care? Does anybody connect with me? I feel alone, misunderstood. Maybe you just had a time when problems just kept coming at you. Like, it just seems like the rain it pours thing, it just kept getting more and more bad news. Things were not going well, and you just laugh at the next thing that breaks, or the next bill that comes in, or the next problem that comes on. And you start to think, could things get any worse than they are right now? Maybe you've had one of those times when just you felt like no one understood and everything was falling apart and you didn't know quite what to do. Well, today we're going to look at the story of a man who was surrounded by lots of threat, and then something happened that changed everything. Just to give a little background to this story, there's a couple ways we can talk about this army. One of the ways we can describe this army is Aram, and Aram is used in some translations. Another one is Syria. So we're using the English Standard Version of the Bible today, which uses the word Syria. So your translation may say Aram, which is the same. And Aram was a neighbor to the north of Israel. Abraham was considered an Aramean. Even the language that Jesus spoke was Aramaic from this people. So they were the neighbor to the north that still had some family ties and connections with Israel. But Syria, the word we're going to use for them today, was in frequent battles with the northern kingdom of Israel. And it wasn't going well. And they kept attacking. And Syria was getting frustrated because it seemed like any time they attacked Israel, Israel knew exactly what they were going to do. And they were prepared to counter whatever Syria was going to throw against them. And so they started to suspect a spy. There was some sort of leak because somehow Israel figured out all their plans. And after launching an investigation into it, the king of Syria figured out that it was a prophet named Elisha. And he somehow was able to figure out all the secret plans Syria was making. And then he would tell the king of Israel, hey, this is what Syria is going to do. And so they knew all the time what to stop. So instead of attacking the king or the armies this time, the king of Syria decided, he heard where Elisha was in a town called Dothan. So instead of attacking the army, he figured he was going to go and attack this one prophet. So he did. He does. And so he sends this force to surround the city of Dothan. Not something that you're planning on. You wake up and you see you're in a little town that seems maybe not real significant. And all of a sudden you're surrounded by an army. And this is what happens. So the king of Syria sent to Dothan horses and chariots and a great army. And they came by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God rose early in the morning and went out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was all around the city. And the servant said, alas, my master, what shall we do? Now, again, this is an unforeseen problem. You don't wake up in the morning and expect an army to be surrounding your place ready to attack you. This is a time where, again, it's a rational question. What do we do? Like, they've probably never been to school and prepared. Like, what do we do in case a whole army is surrounding and out to get you? Like, what do you do? Did you have seminary training about this? Like, you just don't know. There seems like there's a lot of options that you could take. I mean, do we try to negotiate? Do we run and hide? Do we send a message to the king of Israel for help? Like, what do we do? And I read this verse here in a pretty even tone. But I imagine the tone of Elisha's servant was not even. I imagine there was maybe a hint of panic, or maybe even more than that. A lot of anxiety. What do we do? You know, they're all out to get us. What do we do right now? They're in a bad spot. It seems like there's no good option. What do we do? And Elisha's response is, do not be afraid. Now here we see this response over and over in all out through biblical stories. When an angel, a messenger of God appears, a lot of times one of the first things the messenger of God says is, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Again, so over and over, it seems like a good time to be afraid, right? When an army is surrounding you, like when you don't know exactly what to do. But first things first, the first thing that Elisha says is, do not be afraid. Don't panic. Do not be afraid. According to, I would say, the Gospel of Mark, because Mark maybe thinks he's the gospel sometimes. But Mark back there, Abraham Mark. But according to Mark, the greatest movie ever made is It's a Wonderful Life. He just loves it. And there, and there's a scene. Well, his wife agrees, and she's right. So you have to agree. But I think so, too. So greatest movie ever made, It's a Wonderful Life. There's a scene when the hero of the story, George Bailey, he just gets married. He's got rain on his wedding day, but it still works. And he's getting ready to leave town, and they're counting their money, ready to go see the world. And then all of a sudden, they realize that something's not right. They're ready to go to their honeymoon, but a crisis, an unexpected crisis hit, and it's an economic disaster. People are running to banks. The stock market has crashed. People are worried that they're not going to have any money, so they go in crowds. So George decides to try to go and calm the crowds down because he manages the building and loan. So as he's talking to these panicked people, who are afraid, there's one guy, the villain in the story, wants to take advantage of all the fear. So he comes up with this scheme to basically give them half the money they really have, but at least they'll have something because they're afraid they're going to have nothing. So basically he's trying to rob the whole town. And George is just pleading with the people not to turn to this villain because he knows he's just trying to manipulate him. And as he's talking to him, cautioning them not to panic, he says, this thing is not as black as it seems. We can get through this thing together. have faith. In other words, what he's trying to say, what he's trying to communicate is, don't be afraid. It's not as dark as it seems. We're going to get through this thing together. Have faith. Let's go back to Elisha. Do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Sometimes it seems like there's like the opposition is so strong, and it can be hard to remember that maybe there's some people with us or some forces with us that we've forgotten. So we're going to pause the story right here. And this may get a little bit confusing here, but Elisha's mentor was a guy named Elijah. And Elijah was the one who was the prophet before Elisha. And there was a time in Elijah's life, when he felt like everybody was out to get him. He had a victory with God, and he saw God in a powerful way, but then the queen threatened his life, and he thought everybody was out to get him, so he ran away. He despaired of life. He was afraid. He went to a cave in a mountain, and he was didn't feel like there was a lot of hope left. So he goes there, and then he hears a still small voice from God that speaks to him in a whisper and says, Elijah, why are you hiding? So Elijah explains like all the bad things that are happening and how everybody's out to get him. And he kind of throws himself a pity party and talks about all the reasons why he's hiding. And he doesn't feel a whole lot of help. And this is one of the things that he says. He says, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. Now, the God of hosts, too, that's like kind of hosts is like angelic armies. It's a term that speaks that God has power and forces with him. But he says, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only am left, and they seek my life to take it away. So he felt alone. He felt completely misunderstood. Nobody understood. Nobody was with him. Everybody was against him. And he tells us, he pours his heart to God. And God says, he listens. And God says, you need to go do stuff. Quit hiding. Here's some things for you to go do. And then after that, God says this. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal. In other words, Elijah, even though it seems like it right now, you are not alone. There are people with you, there are forces with you that you are not even aware of. You are not alone. And I wonder if Elisha and the other story we're telling was thinking back to his mentor, the prophet Elijah, and that experience. Because surely Elijah told Elisha about this experience he had with God and what God told him to do. So I wonder if that memory of God telling Elijah, you know, there's 7,000 with you don't even know about. Just go do it. So when Elisha later says, those who are with us are more than those who are against us, that may be in his mind. And then he says this, 2 Kings 6:17. Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Open his eyes. There were things going on that he couldn't see spiritually that were happening. He was so focused on the enemy, and God opened his eyes, and he saw that the Lord of hosts had provided chariots of fire above the armies that were surrounding him, and they were protected. This was not the first time that Elisha had seen chariots of fire. We know of another time when he did. It was a time when it was his last moments with Elijah. They're having this last conversation with each other. And Elijah says to the guy who's going to follow him, he says, what do you want? Elisha says, I would like a double portion of your spirit. Elijah says, well, that's a hard one. I don't know if God can do that. I don't know if he'll give you that one or not. But I'll tell you what. if you see me taken away from you, you're good. You got the double portion of my spirit. So a little after that, chariots of fire appear and take Elijah to heaven. So that was the first time. So seeing the chariots of fire again, he's reminded he has a double portion of the spirit of Elijah. He's reminded that he is not alone. And just as Elijah didn't know about all those who were with him, Elisha knew that those who were with him were more than even those who were against him. Even though it looked like Elisha was surrounded, the Lord of hosts was with him. Jesus was surrounded by a mob in the Garden of Gethsemane that was out to arrest him. Jesus had been surrounded by enemies who were out looking to, in the Sanhedrin, who were looking to condemn him. Jesus was surrounded by Roman soldiers who were looking to torture him. But even in those days when Jesus was surrounded by enemies out to get him, those times were not quite as dark as they seemed. It looked like Jesus had been surrounded by death. But in reality, 3 days later, he would show that even though it looked like that, that it was love that was actually surrounding hate. And it was good that was actually surrounding evil. And it was life that was actually surrounding death. What looked like Jesus' defeat was actually the ultimate victory of God. So as we think about this and how sometimes it seems like we're surrounded, what do we do? And as always, what we're trying to do is we're trying to follow Jesus and make disciples who make disciples. So it's a call to lift up our eyes to God when we're afraid, when we're confused, whenever it is, to lift up our eyes to God for help to be unafraid. So I'm going to say a prayer. And this is just if you've never done it before, if you've done it a million times, I just want to invite you to pray after me this prayer about following Christ and lifting our eyes to him. So if you will, pray with me. Oh, Lord, please open my eyes that I may see. Help me to see anything that trips me so that I can turn away from it. Help me not to be afraid. I lift up my eyes, trusting that my help comes from you. Teach me to fix my eyes on Jesus. Fill me with the spirit you give that is not a fear, but a power and love and self-control. Let's be reminded, let's remember to lift up our eyes and follow Christ. He's leading us someplace good. After Elijah prayed for his servants' eyes to be open and they saw the Lord of hosts had provided the chariots of fire, then he prayed for the eyes of the Syrian army to be closed, and they were closed. And whether or not they were literally blind or blind in the mind, we're not commentators or divine. But what's clear is that they were blinded in a way that allowed Elisha to perform basically an old Jedi mind trick. Because what happens is next, the Syrians are blinded. They can't see. They've surrounded the city. And so now they're following Elisha. So Elijah says to him, "This is not the way. And this is not the city. These are not the droids you're looking for." Oh, not that line, sorry. "Follow me, and I will bring you to the man you seek." Move along. And they do. And they do. And what he did, the old master Jedi prophet or whatever he was, led the stormtroopers of Syria to the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel in Samaria. So they had them surrounded. what it appeared just a little bit earlier that they were surrounded. Now the enemies were surrounded. So the king of Israel was there. The soldiers were there. And then once again, Elisha prays, Lord, open their eyes. And their eyes were open. And now they saw that they were surrounded them. And then Elisha pulls a little trick. Instead of attacking those who were his enemies, he befriended them. They threw a party for him and turned them from enemies. Instead of making the enemies disappear, he did one better. He turned enemies into friends, sent them home, and they didn't attack anymore. It was over. And God used Elisha to do that. I want to go back to my 9/11 story. It's getting tense. Worship leader couldn't look at people's eyes. He was afraid. So we started this song. And the lines were, my foes are many. They rise against me. But I will hold my ground. I will not fear the war. I will not fear the storm. My help is on the way. And the Spirit of God was just at work. And I think the Spirit of God did something that he did similar to what he did with Elisha. He even turned some, we thought maybe we're enemies, into friends. Because the Spirit of God was bringing us together in a powerful way. Even when it felt like we were surrounded and things weren't good, God was about ready to do some work and turn the tables, just like God does. Will you pray with me? Heavenly Father, it's been good this morning to be in this place together. This morning, we lift up our eyes with faith that our help comes from the Maker of heaven and earth, our bodies, this world, everything. Sometimes we look in the wrong places, and sometimes we are afraid and feel alone. Thank you that love is bigger than hate, good is stronger than evil, and love is more powerful than death. Life is more powerful than death. And when it looks like we are surrounded, open up our eyes to see you. Give us strength to fight our battles, and use us to spread your perfect love that drives out fear. In Jesus' name, amen.